There's a trouble with coming to Thanksgiving Sabbath like this. This Sabbath sandwiched in between Thanksgiving season and Christmas still to come. Yes, Advent has begun. For 5 weeks we will light candles and sing this refrain together that the generations have sung, O come, Emmanuel. Sometimes there's trouble coming to church on this particular Thanksgiving because we fear that we'll be commanded to be joyful and grateful. Just get with it. Be happy. Be grateful about something. Well, someone said, yeah, I heard you. If not that, we're not going to be condemned for our gluttony of Thursday. Did you eat a little too much? Tell the truth. Did you have pumpkin pie for breakfast? Isn't it the best? Just, I think in heaven, pumpkin pie will be the Sabbath morning breakfast. Always. We will not be condemned for the gluttony of Thursday or the consumerism of Friday. Did you do all your shopping yesterday? Online? Sometimes there's trouble coming to church on this Thanksgiving in between, so we'll not read any of those on the Sabbath in between holidays. We'll not read any of those texts. We will tell a story, however. Let's tell the story from the perspective of the kindergarten classroom, the four or five-year-old classroom that meets in the lower levels. Let's tell the story. We just read a passage, one will come from the line of King David. Let's talk about the line of King David this morning. According to the curriculum that the fourth and fifth graders use in our Sabbath schools, once upon a time, this King David woke up and scratched his head and said, I think today I would like to be nice. It's an interesting place to start the story. According to this curriculum, it's as if big, mighty King David has nothing else to do. He's kind of a lazy afternoon in the kingdom, or he can't think of what he ought to do with all of his warriors. One day he wakes up with a question on his mind. Is there anyone left to whom we could be kind today? In fact, is there anyone left from Jonathan's family? This is how the story begins. According to the children's Sabbath school class, stories in 2 Samuel chapter 9, then David said, anyone left from the house of Saul? That's Jonathan's father, Jonathan, David's close friend. They're both dead and gone. But is there anyone from this precious family that I could show kindness to? This is how the story starts. David asks the question, and quickly he calls for the servant to come, the servant from this household, from King Saul. You could read along in 2 Samuel chapter 9 if you want this morning, but I'll tell you a little bit about it. He calls for the servant to come and decides he's going to be generous, and from the children's story perspective, that's kind of the end of the story. David gives away some things, and they all live nicely together. But if we want to know the story, and maybe this is the reason why we don't talk about the story, because if we back up to 2 Samuel chapter 8, we get the facts from King David. King David, who's been a mighty warrior. King David, who's left blood all over the kingdom. In fact, he's cleaned up the kingdom. 2 Samuel chapter 8 records all of these battles. You can read the litany there. The weapons he used, the blood, how many people he killed. So it is that King David has proved that he's mighty, and the people have gotten what they've asked for. The king, the children of Israel have been asking for a king that can compete with all the other leaders they see. They look left and they look right to other nations. They just want a king who can compete. And they got one in King David, able-bodied King David. In fact, they tease him, they jeer at him when he comes for Jerusalem, finally, for one of these battles. They say to David, you'll never be able to take this city. In fact, the lame and the blind are better warriors than you, David. David cleans them up, and as one sort of parting act, he says, by the way, Jerusalem, the lame and the blind are now banished from this city. So it is, the able-bodied King David has things just as he wants. He puts in place now warriors and leaders and priests and council, and the land is now arranged according to King David. 2 Samuel verse 6, David says that David came dancing before the Lord. I think it's not an oversight that the Hebrew storytellers say it this way. When David takes his reign, he's leaping and dancing before the Lord. We sing this in songs. David goes leaping and dancing and praising God, the king who banished the lame and the blind. This is the part we don't tell the children. This is why we start with the part, once upon a time, King David decided, hey, to whom shall I show kindness today? Let me pick someone. We don't tell the prior part of the story, perhaps for good reason. The strong, triumphant, able-bodied King David has a moment after he's cleaned everything up when he decides he'll exude some kindness. And so he sends for the servant from Saul's house. The Bible says, the servant comes and the question is answered. Yeah, there's one left. His name is Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, go home and thank your parents for your name. Anyone here named Mephibosheth? Because sometimes there's always one. We're all good. There's one, Mephibosheth. There's one left. And there's this seam in the story now. Oh, there is one left? Well, then let me bring this one to me. They bring in this one who's Jonathan's son, King Saul's grandson, the servant whose name is Siva. Go home and thank your parents for your name. Any Sivas here? These are the names in our story. Go home and thank your parents that that's not your name. Siva comes and says, yes, there's one. 2 Samuel 9, verse 6. Mephibosheth comes before the king, the son of Jonathan, grandson of Saul. He falls on his face, and David says to Mephibosheth, here, tell your servant, David, bring him to me. Tell him now, do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father, Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather, Saul, and you will eat at my table regularly. Again, Mephibosheth lays down and bows at King David's feet. What is your servant? Who am I, Mephibosheth says. Who am I in you that will you regard a dead dog like me? I don't know if that's self-deprecation that Mephibosheth calls himself a dead dog. I don't know if that's just because that's the power, the way the power goes. He's the king and I am not. I'm the dead dog. I don't know if it's political language because in warfare with kings and warriors, the weaker is the dead dog. I don't know if it's because here's a little boy who had an accident when he was tiny and he's got club feet that don't work and he drags them along behind his body and he's carried on a stretcher. What am I, a dead dog, like a dead dog that you would be kind? Show me this kindness. So David shares this news. All that belonged to Saul will now belong to you. And these servants, Ziba and his children, they'll farm the land. There'll be plenty of food, the houses, anything that was Saul's is now yours, Mephibosheth. It'll all be granted to you. And then there's this caveat, which is interesting. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, you will eat at my table regularly, King David says. I'll give you all that food and all that land and all those houses, but you'll have dinner with me. We'll have dinner together regularly. This is not once in a while. This is not Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter. This is we will dine together like family. We'll eat together. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. He had a young son whose name was Michal, and all who lived in the house of Ziva were servants of Mephibosheth. He lived in Jerusalem. He ate at the king's table regularly. And the text says what in summary of this little guy? He is lame in both feet. As a student here at the university, let me tell you, I've only studied this story 2 or 3 times. We studied it together a few years ago. I didn't tell you everything I was thinking at that time. I'm a little underwhelmed with King David in this story. Let me come back to that in a moment. First time I studied this story, I was a student at the university, our preaching class. It's called homiletics. All of us were assigned this text from 2 Samuel. We would all study and preach on this text. I was a little underwhelmed with the story then, about 16 years ago. Our preaching class met right here in the church. You may have heard me tell you this story. We came in here and we would actually come in to preach one student at a time, but we would preach to the choir. The class met right here in the choir loft. So we all sat in the choir and the preacher literally preached to the choir. Every Wednesday night for 10 weeks. The night it was my turn to preach on Mephibosheth, well, it wasn't really my turn, right? I wasn't until the next week. I came to class, and it turns out that the 2 students in front of me were sick this night. Right. So I figured I was safe. My assignment was half done. I was not going to be called on to preach on this particular Wednesday night. And when we looked around and student A was missing and student B was missing, I'm starting to get a little upset in my stomach. And the professor says, Oberg, it's your turn, get up. I'm like, I'm not really ready tonight to preach this. Thinking, you know, technically I'm scheduled next week. The professor says to me, it doesn't really matter whether you're ready or not. Sometimes it's like this in life. Get up and speak. Uh-oh is right. Uh-oh is right. And I'm sorry that millions of us over the generations have listened to preachers who are not prepared. Can I just say that this morning? I apologize on behalf of Christianity everywhere at all times. Too many of us have listened to preachers who are not quite prepared. So I stood up and I delivered the 2 pages that I had. And then I just kept talking for a few more pages. I have no idea what I said, but I know that the story sort of ended this way because I hadn't studied all the way to the end of the story, but I know that it's good that there's plenty of food that Mephibosheth eats. So I said, and they all ate happily ever after. The end. Just made it up on my feet and sat down. That's my first time studying Mephibosheth. Second time a few years ago here with us together. I've been a little underwhelmed with David. Now let me tell you why. I'm a little underwhelmed with David who has banished the lame and the blind from the kingdom. I'm a little underwhelmed that the one person to whom he can show kindness happens to be a lame man who's good for nothing in his culture's time. You couldn't find one with less power than this little Mephibosheth. You couldn't find one more ostracized or disregarded than Mephibosheth. It is so simple to bring one like Mephibosheth around your table. How dangerous could that be? I've been underwhelmed with King David, that this is how the story goes. This is the one he'll call to his table. I am, however, taken again by the language David uses. He doesn't need to say this. When he says, fear not, when he says, fear not, that line that the nation of Israel heard for the first time when they're getting ready to cross the Red Sea being chased by Egyptians, the line we're about to read and study again leading into Advent and the birth of Jesus, the fear not comes from the shepherds in the night sky. Fear not is the command Mary, the pregnant unwed Mary, hears the night she learns she's pregnant with the divine. Fear not, are you kidding me? Fear not is this fantastic salvation, salutary greeting. Fear not speaks brand new identity into Mephibosheth. And King David brings him to his table. Fear not, because you're loved by God and you'll be safe with me. This is what it means. Fear not that the community has no space for you, but you'll be safe with me. Come and eat at my table. It's the difference between a welcome, oh, come, you're welcome to come to my house, and hospitality. Pull out a chair and stay a while. This is the part of the story, friends, I'd actually rather hear, and the Bible falls silent right now, and it leaves us to our imaginations, which is what a lot of good storytelling ought to do. How did those meals go between the king and Mephibosheth? Meal by meal by meal. I wonder what they talked about. I wonder what it was like for Mephibosheth to come into the home where here's the king who slaughtered his family and taken control of all of the lands. I wonder what the conversation sat like. Sit down and eat with me. Because I'm taking this on face value that there's some ancient Near East hospitality going on. I don't know that it's a come and eat with me, but no, really, I meant go eat with my servants. I'm going to take it at first reading. Come and eat with me means sit with my family for a while. Meal by meal by meal. I spent a few days this last week in Texas, along with many of our professors, scholars from the Divinity School, annual meetings that happen once a year, large collection of academic scholars, religion and theology professors across all kinds of faith traditions, very large gathering. It's the reason why I'm not usually with you the Sabbath before Thanksgiving. I was intrigued by a newspaper I opened up on Tuesday in my hotel room. Now, this is not necessarily my newspaper of choice. It's just the one that comes free to the hotel. USA Today, right? This was the headline in the Tuesday USA Today that said, "Squabble, squabble, Thanksgiving politics." Someone just groaned. Did you have a rule at your table this week? Did you have a rule about what you would talk about and what you wouldn't talk about? Oh, shaking of heads back here. Was there a rule where you ate? These are the things we'll talk about. These are the things we won't talk about. Or maybe you've lived like that for years. According to USA Today, squabble, squabble, the election ire gets some of us booted from our Thanksgiving tables. Her name is Sarah Jane Cunningham, and she made a public post on Facebook, "You're gonna do it, you're gonna do it, and everybody's gonna read it." Remember that. What she posted rubbed her family the wrong way, but she didn't realize it would get her uninvited to Thanksgiving dinner. Right? The 19-year-old got a phone call from her mother the week before Thanksgiving and regarding her post about a particular candidate in the elections. Mother asked me if I was going to be disrespectful to my family. And I asked, "Well, are you going to be disrespectful to me? If the things I'm saying are disrespectful to you, then probably the things you're saying are disrespectful for me." Her response got her uninvited to the family's Thanksgiving dinner in Maine. She said that although her mom called later and tried to make things right, it was a little too late. She planned to have Thanksgiving dinner with her cats alone. Now, I read this on Tuesday. Wednesday evening when I turned on the news, this Sarah Mae Cunningham was being interviewed. It's quite something when squabble, squabble, you're uninvited to Thanksgiving dinner is national headlines across all the networks. Did you pick it up? Did you pick up the newscast stories that had two or three disgruntled people and then a specialist? Here's a person uninvited to her Thanksgiving dinner. Here's a young family that's decided to stay away from Thanksgiving dinner because they don't want their children exposed to the politics of their grandparents. And then here's the expert who says, "Well, tell me how you feel about it." And I watched several of those this week. I don't know if you saw them too. Uninvited to Thanksgiving dinner. I mentioned this now this morning because it's a theme I also heard in the meetings that I attended this last week when our mentors and theologians and professors think together about what's going on in our world and how our sacred tradition and text relate to what we're experiencing. Here's a thread that I saw unfold all week long. Let me give it to you in snapshots of two or three more experiences we could lay alongside of this one young adult from USA Today. I'm in a meeting where a woman is speaking candidly about what the election results mean to her and her family and her people who've come from someplace far away. And she's wise and educated in a room full of wise and educated people, and she said a paragraph or two or three, and then she pauses to catch her breath, and a man in the room stands up and begins to talk. But she's not done yet. So she looks at him, and he doesn't stop talking. And so she keeps talking, because she's not done with her story. And clearly, to those in the room, we can hear that two people are talking now. And they're big people, they're grown-ups, they're supposed to know better than this. But she's like, "Dadgummit, I was talking, you're not going to talk over top of me." And he's like, "I don't really like your story, so I'm going to talk over top of you." And this went on for a while until everyone in the room was uncomfortable and wiggled in their seats and thought, "Please, God, let it be over," and it was eventually over. That really happened in a group full of professionals. "I disqualify your story," is what this person says by talking over top of her. Another story, a young adult I'm talking with, a graduate school, right? Sharing about her life, something a little bit similar to the young adult in the USA Today. "I have some opinions, they're a little different than my family, so my parents have called and let me know that I'm really not to talk about these things because it offends my grandparents. But they don't understand when they tell me I can't talk about these things. They're telling me I can't be me. They're telling me I can't authentically have my own story and my own voice in the room. Do you understand how extinguishing this is?" A third experience on Sabbath morning, a group of younger Adventists describing their experience living and breathing in the Adventist church and answering the question, is Adventism inspiring to the younger generations? And I can tell you this morning that two or three of the stories were painful and raw and fresh and just on top of the skin and very deeply personal. And it's so uncomfortable for the rest of the people in the room to listen to the stories. We don't know what to do when people are telling us their truths. We usually just grab the mic and say things. And that's what happened. A few voices grabbed the mics and just started to say things like, well, I'm sure it's been kind of difficult for you, but you must know that people inside the church love you and are working hard for you. Which is a little bit like, can't we all just get along now? Go to lunch? And they all ate happily ever after. There's something I catch from King David in our story today at the openness and the honesty of opening his table up meal by meal by meal to Mephibosheth. Meal by meal by meal. Come and sit at my table. Come and sit at my table. Come and sit at my table. To the older ones of us in this room this afternoon, may I just encourage you to keep inviting people and listening to the stories. It is difficult for Protestant Adventist Christians who have been nurtured sort of in a tank of being right. Can I say it that way? It is difficult for us sometimes to sit still and listen without correcting everything we hear, because we're pretty sure there's a better answer or a better story or a cleaner version. I encourage those of us who are older in the room to keep mixing and mingling with our children and grandchildren we don't understand, with the young adults and the teenagers in our community, mixing and mingling and listening. If you don't know what to say when someone expresses something that's confusing all the way to offensive, it's always a good response to say, that's interesting. Tell me how you came to that conclusion. Tell me how you came to that conviction. Tell me how long you felt this way in your life. I'm listening, is what we're saying to them. It's always safe to say these things. And to those of us who are younger in the room, who are done, like this young adult, you know what? Her mom called her back later and said, I take it back. You can now come to dinner. And she's like, peace out. Damage done. I don't want it. To those of us younger in the room, it takes patience to work with those who are older. It takes patience to sit through another round and sit through another round and sit through another round. And I encourage you to continue to use your voices. I encourage you to continue to tell your story and tell your truth truthfully. You see, we can't really tell with the story we have in Scripture this morning how it goes between David and Mephibosheth. Here's what we know is that the power equation is interrupted every time they meet and eat together. And the one who had all the power ends up sharing, and they come together in these combined experiences, and it happens again and again. Oh, not because David has special skills at this, but because when grace has been extended, grace can be offered. That's what happens to David. The grace he's been extended, it's recorded in the Bible. 2 Samuel verse 8, chapter 8, verse 8 says this, I, David, I took you, this is God speaking, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, to be the ruler of my people Israel. I've been with you wherever you've gone, and I've cut off your enemies from before you. I will make you great, like the names of the great men who are on earth. I will also appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them, and they will live in their own place and not be disturbed again, nor will the wicked afflict them any more or as formerly, even from the day that I commanded judges to be over my people. I will give you rest from your enemies. It is God who has been in David all along. We ought not regret coming to church on Thanksgiving weekend. It's not a problem. It's actually grace, and it's good news. I think we're capable of so much more together than we've tapped into, friends. It is God who fills us with this potential to do these conversations together. And remember, grace never leaves us where it found us. It never leaves us where it found us. 3 weeks of reconciliation now, we end today. The act of reconciling ourselves, trying to bring harmony to our relationships, personal, private, community, in our world, in our nation, in our every aspect, the movements of reconciliation bringing harmony. It might mean that we don't go back to before things were broken up in our relationships, but we do go forward. We do go forward. This reconciliation allows us to go forward. We saw shifts like this week in our community. If you haven't seen a picture yet of the meal that was offered here at the church on Wednesday night on behalf of, well, all of you, we got a phone call a few weeks ago from Bread and Water Ministries. Bread and Water Ministries is a nonprofit that meets down at La Sierra Park in the community house there once a week, middle of the week. They have a meal where they feed kind of our homeless friends every Thanksgiving. We got a phone call that said, we've been kicked out of La Sierra Park. Can we use the church? We said, we don't know you people, but we think we're supposed to say yes. This feels like the time to say yes, doesn't it, church family? If you haven't seen the pictures, you need to see the pictures, because the courtyard had hundreds of people eating on Wednesday night. We invited you to come. We said, we don't need your food, we need you. Would you just show up for a few minutes or an hour and be present, sit at the table and interrupt the power differential with people who walk around our community, who don't own homes and can't have jobs? It was beautiful. We'll show you a picture soon of the courtyard and a beautiful ministry on Wednesday night. On Thursday morning, I understand you all cooked more food and dropped it off to Calkins Hall than we needed until Jesus comes. I think that food coma today is from the Calkins Hall meal. The deans told me this morning, oh my word, the Thanksgiving meal for the international students. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes, these are the small gestures. Drop off the food and then can we stay a while and learn about your life? You heard us announce today, you'll hear it again next Sabbath, that next weekend we begin our work on this big old ugly building down the street called the DiMaso Building. We ask you to set aside some time next Sunday and put on your work clothes and come and clean. Listen, if you haven't seen this big ugly building, leave church on Pierce Street, turn right on Golden. When you get on Golden, look left. When you see the ugliest of ugly buildings, you've arrived. It's a big old ugly warehouse, but that's okay, because it's not going to be that way long. I think we're going to call it the Wellness Warehouse. It is our new imprint in the community. Community Services partnering with the university and Community Services and every good idea you can think of. This is reconciliation. One conversation at a time, one meal at a time, one interaction at a time. If you don't know what to say to somebody with whom you disagree and you pretty much are in judgment of their choices in life, it's okay to stand still and say, that's interesting, tell me more about yourself. Because it is that the grace that fills us will be the grace that changes us, will be the grace that we share around our community, friends. I wish I could hear the meals that happened at King David and Mephibosheth's table together to watch how the transformation took place. One more story from Texas. This last week I didn't hear, but I was told about a beautiful duet that sang together. Maybe at some point we can bring these voices to our campus. Dr. Larry Garrity told me he wandered into a room where these two musicians were singing together, one from the West Bank, one from Palestine, and one who grew up in Israel. Michael Hunter Oaks is a Hebrew songwriter. In your picture, he's on the right, and that's a name some people know because he's a pretty great songwriter. His partner in all of this is a Palestinian named Ala Ashaham. He's a Palestinian commentator and songwriter. He works in the conflict zone, lives there now in the West Bank. These two voices come together, both musicians, one singing in Hebrew, the other singing in Arabic, and together they sing and travel around the world, reflecting on their lives, little boys, their stories, diverse stories from territories that have been torn apart by their parents and their grandparents, inherited trauma they have. This is a picture of them at the border crossing, at the western side of the West Bank, making music together, one singing in Hebrew, one singing in Arabic. We're told that it's a provocative and disturbing duo, these two, and sometimes a dangerous collaboration coming together. They sing all around the world. Listen to their song from Psalm 133 as they each sing in their own language.
تخيلها ما اسماها والعالم كله متوحد تخيلها ما اسماها والعالم كله متوحد
other than uninviting people to our lives. There are rich other options. When the story of King David comes to its conclusion with his life, isn't it something that his eyes are gouged out and he is now blind? Isn't it something that generations later it will be his descendants who need a meal from the king's table because they're prisoners in Babylon? We never know how the power equations are going to move in our stories in our world. And while the experts are busy down through the holiday seasons encouraging all of us to actually avoid the hot topics and just keep it light and simple, your pastors want to encourage you to lean in and dig deep. And listen, there are so many more rich options than uninviting people to God's story. Amen.